Hello and welcome to another edition of Center Circle Live. Marty Thompson, Armin Badakian, and Charlie O'Connor Clark back with you again this week.
Yeah, we survived.
What happened this week, Armin?
We survived homecoming.
Well, we were watching the games this weekend, to
yes,
be fair.
Yes, absolutely.
We weren't
yes.
at homecoming.
No, we weren't. But the general sentiment around this weekend was homecoming for universities across the country, and also the week that Forge FC clinched their spot in the Canadian Premier League finals. It was not a straightforward clinch, not one of those ones that you can kind of say, well, when we win this game, we've done it, lads. It was more like, well, if we win this game and then a nine-man cavalry can defeat York 9 and or draw them.
Well, okay, for me, there's two factors to that. And I think people noticing or people watching notice this as well, where it's like the fact that Cavalry and Forge play each other twice and the fact that they were both tied on points at the top of the table.
Yes.
Like, York, I think that was one thing that people maybe didn't realize, is that like York, Edmonton, Pacific had to beat both teams.
Yeah, it wasn't just one. Like Cavalry winning the fall gives it to Forge anyways, because nobody can clinch off of that second place overall rule, because Forge's points tally is already unmatchable. So yes, it was convoluted, and yes, it was a little complicated, and yes, it required Marty, Charlie, and myself to bust out the calculators and actually do some real hard math.
We got but there.
We got it.
We got there.
We're there. Congratulations to Forge FC. Congratulations to Cavalry FC. We will see you guys on October 26th at Tim Hortons Field, and then on November 2nd at ATCO Field at Spruce Meadows. That's the finals, boys. It's our season is coming to an end, but we're not quite there yet. We still have about a month's left of action, and there's still a lot to play for. Jeff Paulus sort of hinted at this third place being important. While we don't know that for sure yet, it seems like a natural kind of assumption that if the seeding remains the same in the Canadian Championship next year, that the top three teams will probably get the first round bye. And if you're York 9, if you're FC Edmonton, Pacific FC, Valor, that third spot is still ready for like the taking. So,
and as we saw this year, that first round bye is very valuable. Just kidding, because all those teams
lost. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it is a good point, right? There's still something to play for in theory.
Yeah. And in general, if you're a team, you want to finish as high up the table as you can. I mean, nobody wants to be that team that finishes last in the first ever fall table, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's still open for everybody. I know HFX is not in the running for the fall title, but that doesn't mean that they're destined for last place. Everybody still has at least four games to play. Cavalry and Forge still have five. So we'll see them play each other twice in the coming weeks. Before the finals, we'll have a little bit of a preview, and we'll get into that a little bit later. Yeah. Also on in this week's episode of the show, John Molinaro will speak to League One Ontario Commissioner of the Women's Division, Carmelina Moscato. And we'll also have a very special guest at the very end of the episode, so stay tuned.
Secret.
Yeah, but not before, anyways, before we get into those, let's break it down a little bit more. Marty, what do we got coming up in the next couple weeks for Forge and for Cavalry?
Well, I think we should start with Forge beating Pacific 3-0. And to me, that was maybe one of their more dominant performances of the season, definitely in the second half.
Second half, at least.
And that's kind of, and I mean, it's good for them to put it to bed. Obviously, they needed those other results. But like, what were some of the other results? That, obviously, Forge winning. But then as we saw with Cavalry and York 9 drawing, that ended up actually sealing things. But we'll get to that game
First of all, how did York 9 not win that game? Before we get into like the Forge, because the Forge game was fairly straightforward. It was a nice 3-0.
Yeah.
And what was it, their 12th game in a row without a loss now? So from that perspective, I mean, it was a fairly straightforward result for them and a good one. But Cavalry goes down to 9 men.
Not straightforward at all.
Not straightforward for York at all.
Eight cards in the second half,
yeah,
I think.
This is the most yellow cards. This is the most cards that we've had in a single match day in CPL history. We had 15 yellow cards, 2 red cards. I believe Nathan Mavilla is now suspended. Jose Escalante
got
for three games. And then yellow card accumulation sees Nico Pasquati and Kwame Awua both miss out on a couple of important games for each of their respective sides.
Right, well, let's talk about Cavalry then.
But yeah,
let's talk about that game.
Yeah.
First off, do we think that was three-game suspension for Escalante?
Yeah, that's a weird one. Okay, so there's a bit of controversy on both sides of this because obviously Cavalry's not happy about the whole exchange that saw Escalante get a straight red card.
It was with Telfer, right?
Yeah. So there was a hit on Telfer, but then there was this like stamp that like Escalante kind of stepped on the referee's foot as he was getting the red card. Like
I think he was kind of doing that to show the referee what Telfer had been doing. But
I think that was the reason for anything.
Yeah, I think
it was just
the
a weird.
I mean, it wasn't. It's not like he hit him hard, but you can't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you can't, but you also, can't hit an opposing
But also,
player.
I think Telfer played Escalante the exact way that Escalante wants to play all the other players, which is get under his skin, get him frustrated, and have him lash out. That's exactly what you want. After the game, though, I mean, obviously after the match, you know, Tommy Wilde Jr. was very pleased with the refereeing. Jimmy Brennan chose not to say anything. But Ryan Telfer said, this is something Cavalry's been doing all year, and I'm glad a referee's finally called them for it. So I don't know about that.
I mean,
they do play a high pressure game, but I've never seen Cavalry play dirty.
I don't know if I'd say
it's also
dirty,
hard to put them in a position where like a lot of the times they're quite comfortable.
Yeah,
in games,
exactly.
Right?
They have had a few of these kind of more heated games where we've seen like a lot of cards. And I think there was that one game, I believe it was in the spring, where they had a couple sendings off against Pacific.
Yes.
Yep,
plus their Canadian Championship Series with Forge. That was extremely heated. So I don't know. Maybe it's something about just winning a lot puts a target on their back. But
well, when you call it 90 minutes of hell, I mean, it's bound to get heated, right?
Well, I think the focus in this
game
has got to be...
Oh, my God.
Thanks for that. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
So, I think the focus on this game is York 9 because it was... They were down to 9 men.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
But you know,
And Biscuati, we gotta mention that Biscuati goal.
We do.
Because that was
unbelievable. Came out of nothing. He literally rounded, like, the entire back line and then shot. But
like, right in the middle of the box and decided to sprint out towards and then just took a shot. It was beautiful.
So here's what I'll say about York 9. I've seen it a lot, and I don't really know how to quantify it, but when you have 9 men or 10 men, when you're reduced, a lot of people think that there's a natural advantage. And yeah, there is to a certain extent. But what ends up happening is, especially when the result isn't necessarily something that Cavalry needs, it becomes actually harder to score a goal because they give up the attacking onus in order to defend it. Mm-hmm. And so now you're defending against two banks of four.
On a small pitch.
On a small field, where before there might have been more space, a little bit more freedom.
But that wasn't happening. That wasn't happening, especially in the second half. Like, I think that Cavalry at times were wearing, like, 3 at the back. Like, there was a couple plays where York 9 would just do, like, 2 passes, and they were through on a break.
But that's,
like,
that's
they still kept Jordan Brown up.
Yeah, that's confidence, though. That's the beauty of being Cavalry is, look, even if you lose, who cares? Like, you've already wrapped up your spring title. Like, there's no real impetus on you to win this game anyways. Not that they don't want to win. I mean, Tommy Wilde Jr. has very clearly stated that they want the CPL treble of spring, fall, and the finals. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, all this being said, I think what you can take out of it is it's not always the easiest thing to take advantage of that. We've seen other teams struggle with this. Like, I think there was a while where Toronto FC actually had a worse record when they were up a man than when they weren't.
But
so,
see, at the same time, I mean, York 9 struggling to score against 9-man Cavalry is one thing, but being exposed the way they did on several occasions.
Yeah, getting scored on is bad,
They should have been scored on twice if it weren't for Nathan Ingham's amazing save.
Yeah, made a great game.
Yeah,
great game.
I can understand it being tougher to score against a condensed side that's just sitting back like that, but just being broken apart on a counter is a little tough.
We got to talk about Forge, though. We haven't really got into them too much. So 3-0 against Pacific. I think one of the more dominating performances of the season, Tristan Borges scoring a nice one in there. Becker as well. Becker maybe should have scored at an earlier chance there. There they are. Now they've clinched their spot. Which win from this fall season is your favorite? I think they've gone like 12 matches unbeaten in the league or more. 13 maybe?
Yeah, that's a good question.
There's been a couple. Like I was thinking of like the Cadell Thomas game against Valor when it was like 40 degrees and soaking. Like everyone was like soaking wet because it was crazy hot.
Yeah.
And that was pretty early on in the season, and that was pretty comprehensive. It was 3-1. Yeah. Like and the goals they scored even then were quite impressive. What's kind of like the fall highlight for you?
See, the one that comes to mind for me is actually a different 3-1 win over Valor, which was I think it was the week after Valor lost 8-0 to Cavalry.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Just looked like they were about to do the exact same thing in the first maybe 20 minutes of that game. I mean, they kind of eased off a little in the second half, and Valor sort of started to get back into it. But that first half was some of the most impressive attacking football I think I've seen.
Yeah, Novak scoring in that one.
Yeah.
Is that correct? Yeah.
I believe so.
Yeah, mine is the 1-0 win over Cavalry.
Yeah, that's a good show.
Back at the end of August when Jonathan Grant scored that incredible...
Podcast legend Jonathan Grant.
We haven't had him on yet, but that was my favorite one, just because I think it was one of those ones that kind of established Forge as the top dogs of the fall. Mm-hmm. Like we had this whole spring sprint where it was really just Cavalry's narrative, and now this was the game that I think was like Forge's essentially their homecoming. Like, this is who we are. This is what we bring to the table. It also gave them an advantage after losing to Cavalry over the two legs of the Canadian Championship. So they showed that they can do it. In a tight match that just needs one difference maker, Bobby Smyrniou has found it in his right back. So
I mean, it maybe wasn't the kind of match that we might have expected from those two teams going head-to-head. It became kind of a very tight affair that just needed one goal in it. But it was an impressive performance from Forge.
Well, let's rewind to the spring season when, you know, maybe we were guilty of it, but we were saying all the Cavalry need to do when they play Forge in late June, it was like the second to last week or something like that, they just need to win. And the Forge went in there, Kyle Becker with that early goal, and it was a similar game, right? Few chances, and they just got that early one.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, here's the thing about Forge that I think we've really started to see now is there's consistency in their results. So it doesn't matter who they're really playing against. Now the onus is on them to succeed. And because of that, I think we're starting to see the real version of Smyrniotis' side. They didn't start the year great. I mean, I don't know if you guys remember, but they started the year with a win, a draw, and a loss to kick off their spring. And even the fall didn't start off as well as they wanted either. No. But
lost at home to FC Edmonton, right?
Yeah, but I think what we've seen is when you take the sample size of a full season or the makings of a full season, Forge has emerged as one of those teams that we expected. Because like this was the preseason favorite. Everybody was talking about Forge. It was only after preseason in Dominican that people were like, wait a second, Cavalry is pretty decent too. Which brings me ultimately to the topic of our debate article today on campiel.ca, Charlie.
Okay, should I play mediator here?
Sure, since go this for is, it.
Okay, so who's the favorite? Charlie?
Cavalry.
So
it has to be.
Armin?
First of all, I'll preface it, all right, I'll preface come on. It by saying that
don't,
I know
don't speak
that
over
I'm
the mediator. Okay. But
I'll preface it by saying that I know I live and was like raised in Ontario. That's not why I'm thinking Forge, okay, before people tweet at us. I think it's got to be Forge. I think they're just in a better run of form. They've shown their ability to perform in the fall, 12 games without a loss. And also, I feel like that team has better players on roster spots 12 to 18. I know Cavalry has...
That's tough, though, because Cavalry has the depth, too.
I know.
Right?
I'm not trying to say they don't, but I just...
Adekube hasn't been playing for the last, two or three weeks or something.
Yeah, and I get that Camargo is still available to them. I'm not trying to take anything away from that, but I just feel like when it comes to difference makers, I think Bobby Smyrniou just has more difference makers on his team, like we saw with Jonathan Grant. And I think, you know, Elimane Cisse can be a difference maker. Kyle Becker is always pulling the strings. Then you got Tristan Borges, Cadel Thomas, Chris Nanko, to my money, I think Anthony Novak is probably one of the best center forwards, if not the best center forward in this league, when it comes to having the ball at his feet. I like Dominic Malanga, but I think a lot of his goals come from the fact that his team does good work, whereas I think Anthony Novak can be a difference maker. And when you have a home and away series at the end, and Charlie, I see you're like shaking your head, but...
time's coming up here on your
own. I think over two legs, you want difference makers, and I think Forge has better ones.
That's true. I think... First of all, I think if you look at the whole body of work over a season, I think I'd still take Cavalry. They won the spring season. They didn't really need to go all out every single week in the fall. I think we've seen a couple weeks where they've maybe looked a little stunted and drawn. But I mean, they haven't really had, when they've turned it on, like they did in Winnipeg, or like they did, I believe it was last weekend against Pacific, they've shown that they're not going anywhere. I think one thing for me that maybe separates Cavalry from Forge is they just seem like their attack is a little bit more diverse. I think because they've got a guy like Dominic Malanga who's unreal up the middle, and then they've also got that wide threat with a Nico Pasquati on the right side who's just able to do so many different things. He can cut in himself or he can send the cross in. I don't know. And I just think in terms of the midfield battle, that's one that Cavalry takes every day of the week.
Okay.
I see. Rebuttal? I totally disagree. I don't see the midfield battle going any other way than Forges because
I'm not sure about that. But
okay, Giuliano Frano.
Yeah.
And then you have Enchiote Johnson, and then you also have
who has been hurt.
Yeah, but I mean, presumably he'll be in the mix with another month of rehab or healing.
And you're saying Awua and then Becker.
Awua
and Becker.
Becker.
Yeah, but then
I don't think any of them have been better this year than Julian Boucher.
We were just talking about him today.
Julian Boucher is statistically probably one of the best number eights in the league.
Yeah.
But
so add Adekube to that and then Ledgerwood.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like
or
that's
Camargo.
Better. Yeah, I don't know.
It's a tough one.
It's such a
I feel like it's definitely more stable defensively.
Yeah. Really what you're going up against is the run and gun of Tristan Borges and Chris Nanko with Anthony Novak versus the wider sort of play of Pasquati and Jose Escalante with Malanga in the middle. Cavalry definitely is a wider team.
Yeah.
And I think Forge's wingers like to cut in. And so that's kind of your battle zones. And when it comes down to it, I feel like Forge's fullbacks will do both jobs a little bit better too. I think when it comes to like high pressing, yeah, Cavalry presses high as a team, but when it comes to those overlapping fullbacks, Jonathan Grant, Kwame Awua, like these guys are constantly pushing forward and providing assists or goals. Or I mean, Kwame Awua is joint assist leader in the league alongside Becker and Borges. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, that's not something that we can like take away.
Okay, so, Charlie, rebuttal? I had to cut you off.
Yeah,
there.
Okay,
even time.
I think the other thing for me for Cavalry is their back four is just better than Forge's, I think, especially in the center with whoever they have in there. If it's it's going to be Dominic Sator, who has been playing right back recently, but like you got Mason Trafford, you might throw Joel Waterman in there, and in goal they've got a huge advantage.
Yeah,
Marco
Carducci
is probably the best goalkeeper in the league right now.
They do have a great goalkeeper. I'll give you the goalkeeper, but I don't know if the back line is like tremendously better. I think it's just
not the fullbacks.
They operate in different capacities. Yeah. When you're looking at center back, I would have totally given this to you, but I think David Edgar has been just golden in his like 10 That's games true. Or whatever it's been for Forge. So early Forge, yeah, for sure, Cavalry had the advantage there, but I think with Edgar in that back line, plus the two fullbacks, even Jonathan Grant wasn't really around.
I think Forge does win the fullback battle.
Yeah.
So I think Cavalry's
going to
win.
Too. Well, thanks.
Marty's on my side.
I just waited till the end of the conversation.
Well, we'll find out. But we also might get a little bit of a preview over the next couple weeks as these two take each other on home and away once again in regular season action. Here's my question to you guys. Do you actually reveal your cards or do you keep them closer to your chest? Because what's the impetus on you right now to really go all out in this one?
There's no way. That was something that Armin and I saw in the Dominican where like Cavalry played like a bunch of different formations and like a bunch of different players in different positions. And it was like game over game that we were seeing. It was like, this is completely different. So I'm assuming they're just going to do that again because why wouldn't you?
So is it an exercise in mind games then, essentially?
I think so. Why wouldn't you take it, right?
Here's my argument. I would say that their best players are probably looking at this as an opportunity to lock down certain trophies, certain individual accolades like MVPs. And I think because the MVP title will be based on regular season play, I mean, there will be a finals MVP. But if you're Kyle Becker, Nico Pasquadi, any of these guys, you want to show over those two games. Because Tristan Borges, these guys are going to want to prove that they're better than their opposites to really lock it down. We'll get into the MVP discussion a little later in the season.
Yeah,
but,
definitely.
Probably
for
after
now, I
games.
Think it's a pretty even fight.
Coming up next, John Molinaro speaks to the Commissioner of League One Ontario's Women's Division, Carmelita Moscato.
How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great.
Good.
Doing very well.
So you recently accompanied Kenneth Heiner-Muller, Canadian women's coach, to Milan for the FIFA football conference, analyzing this past summer's World Cup. Maybe you just tell us a little about the trip. How did you end up going and what did you learn from it?
So the trip itself was the first ever initiative from the TSG of the Women's World Cup Committee to Technical Committee to put something together that was talking about the trends of women's football, put some data behind the technical direction of the game and the physical direction of the game as benchmarks. And President Infantino set out to make sure that this was the best ever World Cup, and encompassing that was the debrief and sort of the learnings from it. So that's what the purpose of the event was, and coupled with a bit of celebration. So anybody who was invited by the Federation was also able to attend the best ceremonies, so to be able to celebrate the best in the game. I had an absolute blast. It was a lot of as much learnings as there were. It was also about I would call it a mixer in terms of a lot of like-minded people, a lot of time for socialization, but in a way where it was discussing grand ideas and you know, understanding where other programs are and all about women's football, which is super unique.
So for you, what was the big learning? What was the big takeaway from the conference?
The big takeaway was learning about the state of where the game is headed from an on-field standpoint, but also in speaking with colleagues and other like-minded people, is understanding, you know, what relative to this role has a lot to do with the implications of a league and what a domestic league could and should do for the country, for the player pool development. And what I liked about it was a lot of countries are very clear on the fact that domestic leagues are a really important part of their success, and that was without prompting. That was sort of, just a topic of conversation and how they're so mutually beneficial that you have national teams' success is often correlated with not only where the players are playing on a daily environment, but do they have a place to play at home?
Mm. So just turning our attention to Sunday, Canada's going to play its first game since the Summer World Cup. They're taking on Japan in Shizuoka. First of all, you've obviously seen the roster. What have you made of the lineup of players that Kenneth has called up for the game?
Really positive. Everybody should be in form. I'm really excited at the three new players that he's bringing in: Jade Rose, Justy Filippo, and I won't pronounce her name properly because it is French, but the Gilles.
Yes.
So really excited to see what they're going to be able to do and hopefully get the opportunity to play. And if it's a tribute to or a kind of indication of where he's looking to build depth. I'm interested to see how that goes.
Diana Matheson and Aaron McLeod still sort of recovering, so they haven't been involved. They're not involved in this team, although Kevin said they're both on the mend and that Aaron might be involved in the mm-hmm. November camp.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've been out for a while. I mean, what's your take on that? I mean, how difficult is it for players to kind of work their way back into the national team fold when they've been injured for such a long period of time?
To your point, John, by no means is it going to be easy for them to find their place on an 18-player roster, but when you look at the history and the pedigree and the experience and the leadership that they bring, at full health, they might be something that the team is in need of. Mm-hmm. When you look at Diana Matheson, her impact on and off the field, Aaron McLeod as well. You know, Kennett will be looking to strengthen the roster in those positions and invest in others, of course, but I'd be hard-pressed to say they wouldn't be included in final plans if and when they're healthy, just on the history and based on the fact that it may be their last hurrah with the injuries and the history that they carry. So, yeah, you know, the team is good without them, but I would say better with them.
What type of team is Japan? I mean, what Canada learn from playing, this type of opponent?
So, watching Japan throughout the recent World Cup and reading about them even recently, looking at the fact that they're a build-up team, they're bringing a Japanese style that came out in the TSG report. They're a style like no one else, and what supports that is their build-up play and their success, right? Their percentage of pass completion and their own third in the middle third is beyond any other team.
Mm.
So they're able to keep the ball in a way that is very a style that is unique to them, hard to break down as well, even though their size isn't tremendous, extremely organized and really hard to penetrate. So they're a team that's going to come out with big learnings from their World Cup campaign, and they're very aware from the articles I've read that Canada's a huge and strong opponent, so they're both going to be benefiting massively from being the first game out of the World Cup. Really unique opponents, Canada being strong and physical,
right. Them
being technical and organized. I think it's going to be big learnings, and they've already qualified for the Olympics as the host nation, so it's really about Canada learning about that type of confederation, that style of play, and gathering data as they move along.
Yeah, so it's a little bit of a taste of what to come and what they can expect
Absolutely.
Should they qualify next year.
That's right.
You've played against them most famously at the 2012 Olympics. What do you remember about the game? What was your takeaway?
What stands out the most is that we actually didn't go into the game necessarily expecting to win. A tie would have been a really good result for us at that time, and I think the shift, actually don't think, I know the shift has been that we can beat these teams now.
Mm.
And it's not the expectation where we're going in hoping for a tie. It's that, how can we expose their weaknesses and bring home the win? So I think the mentality, and then when you look at on the pitch, you do remember that it's almost impossible to defend some of the interchange and the technical ability, the combination play in and around the box. It's as sharp as you'll get in the game. And they've improved since. So, it's a tribute to where the game's gone, the women's game.
And then, of course, that 2012 team was recently enshrined in the Canadian Olympic Hall of Fame. You were a key member of that team. Maybe you just speak to that and what it feels like to receive that honor.
It feels like it's Canada's acknowledgement. It truly does. We all have a medal that, something that's tangible in your hand that you can share with the country. And it was a moment that we all shared, a moment that we're all going to be able to speak about for years and decades to come. And what I love is that it becomes a kind of a permanent part of our history in this way, and it's honored. But I really just feel like it's an acknowledgement of Canada's achievements and, this generation of footballers, my generation back dating all the way, from 2002, that group that started this all off. It's a really amazing thing to say, listen, we've left that legacy behind, and the game is only going to be better and more robust because of that. So big honor, happy to share it with Canada, and I think it's a total accomplishment all around 360.
What made that 2012 team so special, do you think?
It was coming from the place we had come from, being completely sort of broken from the 2011 World Cup experience at the very bottom of the bottom, and John coming in and instilling a belief that arguably was always there. So it was really culture, really, really big organization on the field. The team took on John's tactical identity very quickly, and I really think that it was a sisterhood that was ready to come together and rally from a pretty heartbreaking experience in Germany only 9 months prior. So I think resiliency is really often understated in sport. We sort of bounce back in a way that we'll never forget.
Quickly, we should mention the Canadian Championship final second leg was this past week, with Montreal Impact overtaking Toronto FC on penalties. Kind of a tricky way to end that game, because there could have been a goal at any point, especially in about the last 30 minutes or so.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, look, I'm not a huge fan of penalties deciding trophies.
Armin has some thoughts.
I'll just say it right now. I was happy that the Montreal Impact won it. I mean, they deserved it for their campaign. They had a longer campaign than Toronto FC did in this tournament, and, you know, they faced a really strong Cavalry team and won. So I think it's credit to them. They've also salvaged something out of this season, which probably doesn't see them go in any other real direction.
I think at this point, right, they're out.
But penalties to decide a trophy. I don't know what you guys think about this, but in my opinion...
Yeah, what would you do, though?
Okay, so there was no extra time. So there was no extra time, which is one of the kind of complaints, right?
Yeah.
So is that cool?
I mean, I think I'd like to see extra time, but I understand I understand why they would do it for the clubs.
It.
I mean, like, if I'm a club, like, I don't want to play an extra 30 minutes, especially if you look at, like, Montreal's season. Like, imagine playing all those guys for an extra 30 minutes and then telling them, oh, yeah, you can still make the playoffs here, like, this
Here's
week.
The thing.
Yeah.
I totally agree on the
From the club's point of view, they'd be
penalties
angry.
Deciding certain kinds of finals, like...
Community Shield
or a Carabao Cup or something.
The fun ones.
But if it's like the idea of a World Cup ending in a penalty shootout is baffling to me.
Okay, like, so what would you do? Like, how would you do it?
Okay, just don't ask me, because honestly, like, I am pretty extreme on this. I think a reasonable answer is that you have to give at least half an hour of added time no matter what, right?
Yeah,
like, I think this idea of two legs go straight to penalties, that's not fair. Because clearly you haven't demonstrated that one team can beat the other over 90 minutes, but you can still give them an opportunity to. If it was up to me, if I was in Gianni Infantino's kind of shoes for a day, look, I might just say, like, all right, man, neutral venue, third match, try again. Ooh. Or this is pretty extreme.
Try again, like, kind of in a replay format.
Yeah, get rid
right?
of the away goals. You're still tied on aggregate.
Yeah.
And then whoever wins the third game, and then if you can't sort it in three...
That's
play a fourth?
No, you don't play a fourth. No, that's ridiculous. Let's be real.
So they do that in the National Lacrosse League, where they'll play two games. And then if they're tied, I think if they win either, like, you know, if they're tied on right. for the series, they'll play like an extra, like, mini game at the end of the second one. I always thought that was kind of interesting.
Really?
No, man, here's what I would do. All right. 30 minutes of added time. 30 minutes of added time.
Yeah.
All right. If you can't sort it after 120 minutes of a second leg, you don't go to penalties. Here's what you do.
Everybody loses.
No. Unlimited substitutions. You can take players in and out. Doesn't matter. All right.
Okay.
You keep playing. It's golden goal. All right.
I love some golden goal.
Yeah, golden goal is fun.
It's golden goal, unlimited substitutions, and you just keep playing until someone scores. That means if you want, you could put 8 strikers on the field at once and just go for it.
Oh, my legs hurt already.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
No?
So
look,
for an international tournament where there are more than 7 players on the bench, I actually kind of like that idea.
Yeah, 13.
Because then you could legit at the end of that say, okay, I'm putting 7 players on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And see, you know what? That, like, if you put on 7, the other guy puts on 3, you win, like, I don't know. I get it from that point of view, but for seven.
But just imagine a World Cup final between, like, two major players of this tournament, all right? Like, I'm
Ghana
looking back at, like, 2006.
England.
I'm looking back at 2006, like, Italy versus France.
Right.
Yeah.
How amazing would that game have been if at the end of that game you could put on like 6 more players and just keep going? Now, mind you, France would be down a man, but
yeah,
that's true.
Like a World Cup, Cup final should never be decided on a penalty shootout. Just like I don't think a penalty shootout should ever declare a trophy winner.
It was great drama, though.
It was entertaining drama in the sense that it could literally be either one of them, and that's like
yeah.
And we'll always have the narrative that Zidane wasn't able to take the penalty.
So why are we doing that? But if it's such a toss-up, why are we even giving it such like a pomp and circumstance? Why not just flip a coin? Because it's literally
Canada would love that.
Yeah, it's literally a 50-50 chance. There's no method of being a good penalty taker. If you're a professional soccer player in a tournament final, you know how to take a penalty.
Charlie, how would you want it laid out?
See, I don't hate Armin's idea as long as it's like a tournament at the end of your season. Like you don't have to play 3 days later like Toronto FC and the Montreal Impact did.
I think
if they'd had to play another half hour after that game on Wednesday while they're both still in the thick of their MLS season, that would have been really
tough. I don't know, that's my thing about like maybe I'm wrong about this. I probably am, whoever's listening to, I'm sorry, but like dude, hockey players play like every 2 days and they go hard.
But they don't go hard like they sit down after every minute.
Okay, but you have to be fair.
Yeah, oh, yeah, you definitely do.
My thing is this. You have to earn a trophy. A trophy cannot just be given to you from a penalty shootout, all right? You have to earn it. If that means all 23 players in your team have to see playing time on the field and your entire team has to come together and win it, that's how it should be done. How amazing would this 4-1 Derby Canadian Championship have been if Toronto FC was like, all right, 8 more subs. Montreal, all right, 8 more subs. Fresh players.
Just keep going
until somebody scores.
I'm sure that at this point Toronto FC would agree with you because I'm sure that they hate penalty shootouts at this point.
Well, yeah.
Of course, that was what they've lost now three major finals.
In like the last 3 years.
In all three
competitions. 2016 MLS Cup, 2018 CONCACAF Champions League, and now the 2019 Canadian Championship.
So, have you ever heard of the cage match in wrestling? See, I kind of want to have at the end of extra time, so still have the 30 minutes, I think that they should roll in sort of this cage, like FIFA Street style. I've been playing the new FIFA with the like FIFA Street format.
Wow.
You roll that into the middle. It's all caged.
Oh, my
God. Everyone spills onto the pitch so they can go like right up to the cage.
This is ridiculous. Logistically,
this is awesome.
And then you just play like a best of five or whatever. Like, who cares?
Play with like boards, you can bounce it off.
Yeah. Imagine all the players, like, you know, after like when they're like taking a rest, trying to get ready for the penalty. Imagine that, but they're putting like, you know, like street shoes on basically to get in the cage. Get in the cage.
All right. Well, that'll be this episode of Center Circle Live, but we will stick around for extra time if you guys would like a little bit more. So stay tuned, and we have a very special guest coming up. Forge might be playing Cavalry FC twice more in the regular season, but they also have two more important matches against York 9 FC. And to talk about those upcoming fixtures, which all take place over the next couple weeks, we are joined by York 9 mascot and android from the future, Yorkie, the mascot. Welcome to the show, Yorkie.
Thank you for finally having me on the podcast. I may be from the future, but I was growing impatient.
Well, first off, Yorkie, I'm a big fan. And thank you again for being on the show. We really appreciate it. You know, you're from the future. You've already experienced these games. I'm just curious if you could give both Forge and York 9 fans maybe something to look to on these two games. What can we expect?
I was just a baby robot in 2019, so I can't really speak on this year's results. But what I can tell you is that Forge and York 9 do enjoy some thrilling encounters over the course of the next century. My personal favorite? The time I scored 9 goals against Forge at Tim Hortons Land in Hamilton, New Ontario.
What?
Hamilton, New Ontario. What does that mean? Wait, did he say he scored 9 goals against Forge at Tim Hortons Land?
Tim Hortons
in
Land?
In New Ontario?
What is happening?
9 goals. Well, you've clearly had a pretty long and illustrious career. Are there any other highlights that maybe you'd want to fill us in on?
When my software was upgraded to Soccer OS 20 ahead of schedule, I accidentally scored 435 goals in a single match.
Accidentally?
That was fun. I also met Prime Minister Aubrey Graham one time in 2036.
What?
He's so different in person. Smells good.
Prime Minister Aubrey Graham?
We have a lot to look forward
to. Did he say he scored 400 and something goals?
By accident?
Oh my God.
Soccer OS 20.
Yeah, I wonder what that's like.
What is this interview?
Yeah, probably add some like touch, you know, like a new touch element.
All right, I need to know more. I got to know more. Yorkie, can you give us a couple more things that happen in the future? Like what else happens in the world of soccer in the next century?
Would you believe me if I told you Canada wins the World Cup title on penalties?
Oh my, no.
Just kidding, I'm actually not allowed to tell you guys too much about the future. But I can tell you that Manchester Chelsea does defeat Real Barcelona in the 2072 Champions League final. I can also tell you that if you live in Old Hamilton or Old York region in Old Ontario, you definitely want to go check out Forge versus York 9 on October 6th and the reverse leg in York on October 12th. Trust me, both of those games are going to be legendary. I don't want to say too much, but you're going to want to be there, and if you see me at York Lions Stadium, come say hi.
Oh, we will. Oh, absolutely. We'll definitely come say hi.
York is such a tease. Such a tease, and I hate you for that, but thank you so much for being on the podcast.
No problem. It was fun being on the podcast while you guys were still hosts before the incident.
What?
Actually, I'll keep your futures a surprise.
What? No. Yorkie, get back here.
Yorkie. Oh, no.
He definitely hung up.